Welcome, everyone. This is The LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, January 13th, 2007. And from 3 to 4, that's Eastern Time Live in the United States, we have our weekly LaRouche Show. I will be the host today. My name is Marcia Mary Baker, and I'm with the Economic Section of Executive Intelligence Review News Service. We, at this time, are only, well, in fact, we're not yet 2 weeks into the new year. And Mr. LaRouche, on January 11th in Washington, D.C., gave an international webcast address about our tasks, his evaluation of the situation, and really what some people who are listening know to be the kind of radical shift we need for the good. You can call it the new politics, and we certainly need it for new economics to replace the old economics and bring about a change in people's conditions in every way, economically, culturally, and so forth. So to be discussing what is or isn't happening in Washington, D.C. right now, and to be looking at that not only from inside the United States, but internationally, what this means from the world, we have three guests with us I'm glad to now welcome. First, I'm going to turn to the transatlantic guest who's in Wiesbaden, Germany, Mr. Alexander Hartmann. Welcome.
Yeah, hi.
And I'll say right now, we want to hear a lot from Mr. Hartmann, who's running for mayor of the town of Wiesbaden. And this is hardly a local issue. He will be telling you what's all involved in this in just a moment. But from Washington, D.C., we have on the LaRouche Youth Movement panel two organizers who've been in Washington, D.C. for this first week of the new 110th Congress. The LaRouche Youth Movement have had a week of action, and so we welcome Megan Roulard. Hi.
Hi.
And with her, Matthew Ogden. Hi.
Hello.
The connections are very good, and all I want to point out to people is just that I continue to ask you to look on the LaRouche pub.com website. You can look on the Political Action Committee of Mr. LaRouche, LaRouchePAC.com, LaRouchePAC.com, for this dynamite piece that he's written on the art of capital budgeting, the lost art of capital budgeting, what to do about the epic crisis of the economy, how to approach things, because there is at the very least, you could say there's a vacuum in people's minds, people of goodwill, let alone others, about what are we going to do. I could give you some updates, but I won't, on how the various kind of bubbles are bursting in the world financial system. But in addition to that, you can see the archived webcast from January 11th on the site that I mentioned, LaRouchePAC.com. And so with that, what I'd like to do, people may have experienced various emotions when they watched Wednesday, January 10th in the evening, the 20 minutes of President Bush making his announcements. But that's the whole point. We are not stuck in a situation where we're going to have to see this insanity continue to play out. We're committed to change the world. So what I'd like to do is turn things over to Matthew and Megan, either one of you, to give some overview of what your intent has been, what your impact has been, how many people, what the who, what, where has been of your, what you've been intending, what you've been up to in Washington, D.C., please.
Okay. I'll start. I'll just give a little bit of a review of what we did this week. This is totally shocking for everybody in the LaRouche Youth Movement, because people who have been organizing for a few years or even just a few months in this process of weeks of action have experienced mostly, when we've come to Washington, a kind of what we've dubbed the 109 mode, the 109th Congress mode, where the Democrats in office are acting like underdogs and all three branches of government are dominated by a Republican Cheney-controlled dictatorship. And so we came into Washington this week, and it's a completely different political universe. And it even took time for some of the 110ers, the new Congress, to actually get used to the fact that now they were no longer the underdogs. But what we've encountered is that there's a real willingness to make a whole lot of trouble from these new freshman caucus, the new Democratic congressmen. And we went into the Congress, and you've never seen more smiles on faces inside Capitol Hill, at least in the last 12 years, or as long as I've been going there with the youth movement. But people are completely overjoyed, and there's a completely new fresh air on the Hill. And so we were going into these offices, and it just is a testament to the fact that the entire political universe now all around the world is being shaped by the dynamic of the LaRouche Youth Movement. Even though we're not huge, the kind of politics that we're engaged in has impacted almost every single one of these congressmen directly. We were going office to office targeting some of the new congressmen, and all of these guys have reported that I've seen you all over the country. Most of them had seen us, or several of them had seen us in their districts where we were engaged in the organizing, the campus organizing, and the organizing that LaRouche has called the new politics, which got out this substantial youth vote.
And that might be from anywhere, Ohio or Massachusetts.
Well, we talked to the congressman who replaced Tom DeLay in Texas, and he was very, very happy that we had been all over his district organizing against DeLay. All over the place. Ohio, you're right also about that. The other thing that they reported, though, is that said, of course I know the LaRouche Youth Movement. I saw you guys when I was in Boston. All of these guys had to come to Harvard University for an orientation a few weeks after the election. And that was our first major intervention into the post-election political environment. The whole Boston LaRouche Youth Movement local went into this really open orientation forum at Harvard University. And for 2 days in a row, we were all over the place. And we got to talk to every single one of these guys. But even more importantly, we got to sing for almost every one of these guys. And that was the first thing that was on their mind. Said, I remember you. You sang for me up in Boston. And so that had such an impact on a lot of these guys that many of them had taken the literature that we had given them when we met them at Harvard and had spent the last few weeks before they came to be sworn in reading through LaRouche's literature, the Emergency Reconstruction Act, the other things that we gave them, and they had been thinking about it since then. So several of these reports have told us that several of these congressmen were already ready to discuss LaRouche's policy initiatives and things like that. So from the organizing on the ground, getting out the youth vote during the campaign, to the first intervention on these new congressmen at Harvard University, to what happened even in the days preceding the official week of action, where we had a crew of five extra young people come down from Boston. I was a part of it. Megan was a part of it. Where we hit some of the parties that were being thrown around the day of the congressional swearing in this just totally loose and free environment. The response that we got to our chorus that was at those events, in this pre-party, pre-Congress party events, the response that we got to that in the days leading up into the week of action, and then the escalation that we had when we had the whole East Coast, the LaRouche Youth Movement come in, done a lot to shape the first days of these new congressmen's congressional careers.
Well, that's great. How many have you had, Megan? I mean, this past week in numbers?
I think there's been about 60 people who came in from Detroit, Montreal, Boston, some people here from the West Coast and Texas. So people coming in to D.C., from all of these different campaigns around the country where we made a huge impact on the campuses, all getting to congregate in D.C. and sort of reap the fruits of our work by directly organizing many of these congressmen who, as Matt said, I mean, we ran into this guy yesterday who took Tom DeLay's seat and just, you know, acknowledged the fact of the power of the organizing of our youth movement, you know, in his campaign specifically. So it was a pretty great opportunity to have everybody here to continue to escalate the organizing we had done, in the districts.
That's great. And there are a lot of questions that pose themselves. I'll ask if Alexandra has any from Germany in just a minute. But I will tell everyone, you're listening to The LaRouche Show, our weekly show from 3 to 4 Eastern Time by Internet. But there are classes going on all day today of these 60-plus people that Megan and Matt may have to leave for. So I want you guys to keep talking till you have to go out the door, and then we'll turn to Germany. But, Alexander, do you have any questions right up front?
Well, it's going to be interesting what the reflection of this is going to be here in Germany. I can say some things on that later. The most interesting thing for us here in Europe is obviously the foreign policy part of the U.S. policies. So you've been discussing with these congressmen quite a lot about Iran and other areas that are of concern also for us. Maybe you can go a little bit into that.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually reflecting on this. We saw, for example, in the case of the United States Senate, Lynn has talked about this, where after last year's Christmas break, you had a real, you know, type of impotence reflected in the behavior of the Senate, who, you know, was not challenging Dick Cheney, the administration that we had seen the year before, where they were acting more, they had more courage because they were working more closely with Mr. LaRouche, listening to some of what he was saying. And one thing I noticed this week, we had a big impact in a couple of these hearings and in the days prior to some of these oversight hearings that were going on in the Senate around Bush's Iraq surge plan. And we were really confronting many of these senators directly on the fact with the aid of Jess Steinberg's article on Bush's new tragic Peloponnesian War in Southwest Asia, the fact that the intent behind the Iraq surge was a strike against Iran, and that while the military had come out speaking out against this, the Senate, the Congress was doing nothing, and that this is an imminent threat. So we were directly organizing, confronting many of these senators in the past couple days in some of these hearings. These are actually the same individuals who in recent days are coming out in these hearings saying, look, we want to know if this surge is targeted against Iran, which is pretty exciting in terms of the fact that, you know, that we had really made this the issue the minute we got here to D.C.
I think the strategic significance couldn't be more clear. Some of the latest briefings we have is people may well know that even though Bush made this speech Wednesday night, and many people who are already well briefed were shocked at how Bush was scripted to go after Syria and Iran. And in fact, the elements of the surge, in other words, military people having their stays extended or being called up early to go back to Iraq, are already underway. And Bush is supposed to speak tomorrow night, Sunday evening, on 60 Minutes. Cheney's been deployed to speak tomorrow morning on Fox News. That's January 14th. So, Megan, what you just said about being the on-the-scene conscience and courage giver to oppose this stuff is... we don't even know how critical it is, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Did many... on the question of impeachment or this sequence of impeachment or however you talk to people or had banners about, I don't know what your banners, like impeaching Cheney first, did this resonate? Did this get picked up? What's that like?
Well, we had a lot of fun with that, actually, because, you know, on Thursday, in the beginning of LaRouche's webcast, he declared this to be the year of bel canto choral polyphony. And so we decided that before the week of action was over, we organized a ensemble with enough voices to cover all vocal parts of people from the youth movement who had good, developed voices. And it was about six or seven of us to go around to every single one of the freshman offices and greet them to Washington and celebrate the new Congress with them by giving them a musical gift.
So it's a serenade of the highest level.
Uh-huh. And so we did it. We went around to all these offices, and it was great. It was a totally shocking and surprising and fun response. And we would go into these offices and sing them. We sang them two songs. We sang them a canon by Mozart, Alleluia, which is very happy, very triumphant. And then a canon by Mendelssohn, but which we changed the words to. That is, impeach Cheney while you still can. And so a lot of these offices really enjoyed that. Many, many of them asked for the words. One of the women, one of the congresswomen who was a, had heard us from down the hall singing in another office, asked for us to come into her office while she was briefing her whole staff meeting and had her whole staff listen to us sing. And it turns out that she said, this is exactly my field. I was a music major before I was a congresswoman. And the most fun, in an office of a freshman congressman, he brought us in into the back office of his and had us sing for him both of these canons, and then asked us to teach him how to sing. And so while we sang one phrase, he repeated it after us, and we taught him to sing the whole canon. And teaching congressmen how to sing is a lot of fun. But that same congressman told us a story where he said, look, we're here to make trouble, and I'm not ready to bow down to Dick Cheney. And he told us a story about when he went to the White House to meet and greet. And he said, I was willing to shake George Bush's hands, but when it came to Dick Cheney, there's just some things that I can't do. And when we asked him, when we sang him the song about impeaching Dick Cheney, he said, I'm ready to do it. And so in response to that, we brought up an idea that LaRouche brought up in his recent paper on the capital budgets, where he discusses the question of what kind of character does a person like Dick Cheney have. And we told him the story from Shakespeare's Othello and the opera that Verdi wrote based on Othello, the story of Iago and what Iago confesses to be his idea of himself, his idea of human beings, and his idea of religion, which is satanic. And that congressman got, he said, so what you're telling me is we have an Iago in the White House right now? And so these guys get it, especially the freshman congressmen, and they all, when we asked them, they all said, yeah, we're here to make trouble. We're not here to just go along to get along. So that was the response to the question of impeaching Dick Cheney.
Oh, that's great. Well, I want you to stay for the hour. Do you have more time now we can continue, or is this time you have to leave? I know you have classes.
Let me see if it's gotten started yet.
And you're listening to The LaRouche Show, January 13th. And I encourage you to investigate this further. And now you know directly, this wasn't prearranged, what you need to give resources to affect this this kind of change among mass numbers. I'm sure it's infectious. Any ones or twos of congressmen who can appreciate what it means about Shakespeare and Verdi's lessons of history, I think we can change the world. So, Megan, are you still there, and are we okay?
Yeah, I think we're going to get going soon.
Okay.
The class is about to start. Yeah, I would just add, I know you're going to hear from Alexander. The first day that I got here to D.C., we're organizing at out right outside the Congress, and I ran into a guy, you know, who's been working in D.C. for 30 years, had been a staffer on the Hill for different congressmen, and he was talking to me about what happened in the election, and he was very excited, but he said, look, I want to believe that this wasn't a fluke. Can you, you know, I want to believe that, you know, there's something lawful that happened that's allowing all this exciting things to happen. So I think it's really crucial that everybody listening, follow all of our campaigns around the world. I know you're going to hear from Germany, but that's key to understand what's going on in the world.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Megan. Thank you very much, both you and Matthew, if he's gone already. And good luck. And you're traveling back to Boston to carry on up there, is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Bon voyage. And we'll hear from you again soon, I hope.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So let's turn then to Germany. Megan just stressed about how this isn't, we're committed that it's not a fluke in Washington, this whole shift. And, yeah, we have major things happening in other nations around the world. In 2 days, there's a new inauguration in Ecuador and South America. There are other elections. So there you are in Wiesbaden, Mr. Hartman. Could you tell us, for all our international listenership, the where, what, when of what office is at stake, when the election is, and about the Buzo and so forth?
Yeah. So the election that I'm running for is the election for the mayor of the city of Wiesbaden. Now, Wiesbaden is the state capital of the state of Hessen, which is the fifth largest state of Germany. So this is like Columbus, Ohio, or equivalent. Mm-hmm. Now, also for 30 years, Wiesbaden has been the European headquarters of the International La Rouge movement. So we're quite known here in the area. And now what happened is something which in a certain way was unexpected, but it's also lawful, because Lynn has always been talking about the incompetence of the generation of the boomers and the generation a little bit after that. And what happened is that the SPD, which, you know, in terms of political sympathies would be kind of comparable to the Democratic Party.
The Social Democratic Party.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the Social Democrats. They failed to register their candidate, which they had dutifully nominated in last April. They failed to turn in the papers for that candidacy by January 4th, 18 o'clock. So suddenly we have a very interesting situation, because if you go back through the last 30 years, and I'm a 30-year veteran of the La Rouge movement, so I have witnessed all this in person and as an active participant. We had in the 70s the start of the ecologist movement, which was important to wreck Germany economically. And it was the state of Hessen and the city of Wiesbaden, which was the first state government where the SPD basically dumping their own established policy and their own established politics and politicians in order to move into the red-green coalition. So the whole social democracy they oriented, you know, it is like as if in the social democracy it's all Gore, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this was in 1982. It led to the downfall of the Schmidt government later that year. And ever since that time, Germany has been on a road to industrial destruction fast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and faster and faster and faster. And one of the driving factors was that on the one hand you had this, the left wing, so to speak, was the ecologist orientation, and the right wing, they were the free traders. So now you had a situation where, you know, imagine if the Democrats failed to register their candidate for the mayor of Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah. And the election's in April. It was a year from a year ago, is that, or when?
No, it's on March 11th.
Oh, my, excuse me. Okay, March 11th.
So it's like 2 months from now.
Mm-hmm.
And now you can imagine that the SPD being the party, the former party of the industrial workers, there are plenty of people within the party or who were formerly with that party who would vote for the SPD because they dislike the alternative even more. And this was always a problem for us as the Buzo, you know, campaigning for the values that the, you know, the true former social democrats, you know, the pro-industrial people who knew that you need productive economy in order to have a decent standard of living and have decent jobs and be able to raise a family and so on. This strata of the population was like they stuck to the SPD because, you know, they didn't see any alternative. Part of the problem was that the media never wrote anything on the Büso. But it was also that people are saying, you know, the Büso is a small party. They won't get over the 5% to get into any parliament. So therefore, it's a waste of the vote. We rather vote for the winner.
Uh-huh.
Or give the lesser evil, so to speak, the chance to win over the bigger evil. Now, with the failure of the SPD, that option is gone. There is no, you know, they have, what do they have? They have the present treasurer of the city of Wiesbaden, who is the candidate for the CDU, the conservative Christian Democrats, and he is full on this free trade, deregulation, privatization. He's a champion of that. And then you have the Green Party, which ironically last spring chose to change the coalition, and they are now in coalition with the new with the neoliberals, you know, uh-huh. with the conservatives. Actually, we have something what we call the Jamaica coalition, because the Liberal Party, the FDP, Free Democrats, they are also part of the governing coalition here in Wiesbaden. Mm-hmm. Now, the effect of that is that there are two minor other candidates, but the bulk of the SPD voters, they don't have anyone to vote for. And this is a big, big opening, and this is what we are moving in now with our intention is to run this campaign based on what Lynn writes in the new policy paper. So we're really out to get a lot of these votes. And by going for such a breakout here in Wiesbaden, you know, this is something that they can't cover up in the news by not reporting on it.
That's very exciting. I was just going to say it's a real flagship situation, isn't it? Are there other, just for information, are there other towns of Hessen mayoralty at the same time, or does it vary?
It does vary because the mayoral election is depending, you know, the term is a six-year term.
Okay.
But there is a new election whenever a term is ended.
I get it. So it could be any.
For example, this election is early, in fact, because the mayor who was elected 4 years ago in an election where I also ran is now reaching his retirement age.
Okay.
And by law, he has to resign his office by the 1st of July. So therefore, there has to be an election before that, which is, in fact, 2 years earlier than it otherwise would have been if some younger person had won the election.
Right. Can I ask you to, well, first, I just need to make a program announcement at this time for just a minute, and then we continue with our second half hour.
Yeah, sure.
I'll just repeat that it is January 13th, 2007, just 13 days into the new year, and this is the LaRouche Show on Executive Intelligence Review's website, which is www.larouchepub.com, LaRouchePub.com. And we definitely encourage everyone to look once and then repeat times at the January 11th international webcast that Mr. LaRouche gave based on Washington, D.C., but taking international questions as well as from Congress and others in Washington. And you know you can see that on www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com. And next week, that is January, that would be the 20th, again, from 3 to 4 Eastern Time, we'll be here. And please, you have still opportunity if you want to ask Mr. Alexander Hartmann, running for mayor in Wiesbaden, Germany. Any questions by email, go right ahead. So, Alexander, let me ask you to draw out one thing, is that you said, you described how almost 25 years ago that in your state and in your town of Wiesbaden, which many Americans know because of the long-time U.S. military base there, of course.
Actually, in fact, the European headquarters of the U.S. Army is about to move from Heidelberg to Wiesbaden.
Is that so?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So people know the name. But what I was going to ask is that if you, I think this will mean a lot to many people here who've seen the radical change over 20 years and in the last couple years of our own heartland and industrial belt from Pittsburgh westward through Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, and Illinois. In Hessen there, you have the Rhine, Main rivers, right? You had a certain kind of economic geography. And then this deindustrialization you're talking about, could you give us some highlights from the particulars of your area?
Well, Wiesbaden it used to be an important center of chemical industries. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're down in Biebrich, which is a suburb which is directly bordering to the Rhine River. This has been an important chemical center for more than 100 years. In fact, when the Albert Works were founded in, I believe, 1860-something, soon after, half of the phosphate fertilizer of the world's production was produced right down there.
Hmm.
And this was important because it was used to build up the ironworks, because in a certain process in the iron production, the so-called Thomasbirne,
mm-hmm.
they found out that the crust that builds within the machine that you actually want to get rid of in order to be able to produce steel,
mm-hmm.
that crust just needed to be crushed, and it's phosphate fertilizer.
Oh.
So what happened is that the guy who built up this company basically went to other steel producers, and he says, well, if you convert your factory to this more efficient thing, I'll buy your waste. And that's how this was part of the modernization of the steel industry here in Germany in the 1870s, 1880s.
Wow, that's great.
And at the best time, there were 18,000 people working in the Biebrich chemical complex, which was not only Albert, it was also Kalle. Later that merged, became part of the Hoechst conglomerate.
Oh, yeah.
And, by now Hoechst became Aventis and whatever it is now. You know, now the complex that we have still has 5,000 employees, but they're spread to something like 360 different companies as a reflection of globalization and the decomposition of the industrial structure.
Mm.
And this is actually something that we need to change, because, what you need to finance in a society, health system, education, and so on, you really need the productive base of the economy. And if that's gone, if we ship out the jobs to Czechia, to China, or other places, the effect is that we cannot function anymore in terms of production. We cannot provide a living to our people. But at the same time, we cease to be the market for the Chinese and the Czechs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to work for them either. It's a total dead end. And this is something that we've been working to change. And our function in the election campaigns was always to try to catalyze a debate in the population how to do that. And the election campaign here in Wiesbaden is catapulting us into a perfect situation to do that.
And somewhat then by the Social Democratic Party not even meeting the filing deadline for its own candidate, you've got a certain amount of the occurrence has served to pressure the media so they don't do this evil blackout job, right? You have more coverage or more access to get your ideas out?
It was actually quite funny because after they failed to turn in their papers on time, then they asked all the other candidates, including me, to withdraw their candidacy so that then the city, running out of candidates, would need to reschedule a new election, which would then mean that they can dutifully file their candidate. Now, this is the first time I've heard that canceling an election is democratic. Because they said people need to have the democratic choice of an SPD candidate. If they don't have that, it's not democracy, you know, but it's that's not our fault. But it's also, it reflects, I mean, the SPD, they are not new in politics. This is a party which is 125 or 130 years old.
With how many chancellorships, right?
Yeah. It's at least, well, they had three chancellors. They had Willy Brandt, they had Helmut Schmidt, and they had Gerhard Schröder.
Okay.
And, of course, Schmidt was, you know, if you look at them, Schmidt was probably the best of them, although he had his limitations. But everyone in Germany being chancellor also always has the one big limitation, that we are the junior partner of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So we're very much affected by what happens in the United States. And this is actually part of my campaign to spread the good news that the winds in Washington are changing and that we do have an active movement in the United States which is working to impeach Bush, to impeach Cheney, get out the war party and get in a new economic policy. Because much of what is being done by the German governments is in fact a reflection of what they know that the U.S. government expect them to do. It was like a miracle that Schröder in 2002 chose not to publicly declare that he's not going along with the Iraq war. This is like unheard of. And in fact, what the, if you look at the population, this is what won him the election, despite the fact that people had been suffering 4 years of red-green economic catastrophe. I mean, the present situation with the Social Democrats, just to give you an example, we have here in Hessen, in Biblis, a nuclear power plant which is running for close to 30 years. It has set several world records in electricity production per year in terms of kilowatt hours.
Mm-hmm.
And now the leader of the candidate that the SPD chose for the governor of the state, a lady by the name of Andrea Ypsilanti, she made it a campaign plank to shut that nuclear power plant down and replace it with 1,700 windmills.
Oh, no.
So this is, and we have already so many windmills. Germany, it's in terms of capacity, it's nearly as much installed capacity as we have in nuclear power. It's like 22 terawatt capacity or gigawatt capacity in nuclear, and it's 17 gigawatts in terms of windmill. Now, of course, that works only one-seventh of the time.
Yes, you know? That's I wanted to ask you. Tell us about that. But you, in other words, you go drive around the landscape and you have to see a lot of them. Is that the idea?
Well, it's more on the other side of the Rhine, actually.
Okay.
Rhineland-Pfalz is another state. They have had a social democratic government for quite some time, and they went into that much more than on this side, on the Hessen side. But this is what the SPD wants to change. Now, imagine what would happen if in this Wiesbaden election, I would get more votes than the Green candidate.
Mm-hmm.
This would, you know, these politicians in the SPD, they're not green because they're green. Mm-hmm. They're green because they're opportunists.
Right.
And they would feel that the wind is changing, and then you would meet a lot of them who would suddenly discover that they've always been pro-nuclear, and in fact, they were always thinking it's nonsense, you know.
You're right.
This kind of we have in East Germany, we call them the Wendehälse.
Oh, okay.
That's the people who cannot remember that they ever were part of the SED, despite the fact that they were functionaries in the party, you know.
Oh, well, I hope to see this come to pass. I'd like to see those opportunists go back to their real roots.
Yeah, and it's important because the SPD is part of our grand coalition government. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the economic policies, you know, the free trade part comes from the SPD, but from the CDU, from the conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
But a big, big problem is that whatever in terms of infrastructure development, you know, there are some impulses within the conservatives who say we need more investment into infrastructure, and this is being blocked at this time by the Social Democrats. So if we could catalyze a shift change, a turn of the Social Democrats in Germany, this would be very important because this would, like, unleash a lot of the economic forces that are now being held back, that we urgently need to rebuild our industry, our infrastructure, but also that the world needs in terms of building up whatever these third world countries need. If you go back to the 70s, at that time we did have a contract with Brazil that we would export 12 nuclear power plants to Brazil.
Uh-huh.
And in 1977, the key people in Germany who were promoting these policies were killed by the RAF terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
And the effect was that all these things were canceled. You know, this was, of course, also the period of the Jimmy Carter government, Brzezinski's policy, who said we need a controlled disintegration of the world's economy. And before that, you had Henry Kissinger, who actually said that in his National Security Study Memorandum 200, that third world countries should be prevented from growing both in terms of their population as well in terms of their economy, because America could only keep being a superpower if they would have access, unfettered access to all the raw materials of these countries.
Right.
So this was a geopolitical policy preventing third world development. Now, if you look at the world and look at where do we need power plants to produce fresh water and all this stuff, power plants do not build themselves. You know, you need skilled capacities to do that. And Germany would be one of the countries which could provide this technology for the world. And this is actually what is also part of my campaign here in Wiesbaden. Actually, Wiesbaden has been, although it's a city of a quarter of a million people, besides these industrial centers down at the Rhine, the historical Wiesbaden has always been a bureaucrat's center.
Right.
It's been the seat of the Nassau Dukes from 1800 on. It was the seat of the province of Nassau after 1866, when Bismarck basically conquered Hessen and annexed it in the process of German unification at that time. And it was the Prussians who basically forced an industrial development on this region. The local oligarchy never liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And although you did have a population which, you know, where you did have ingenuity, for example, here in the Taunus Mountains is the place where the Nikolai was born. inventor, I think, of the car engine. You had Albert, I named that. Then you had Dukerhoff, who was very important in the development of cement. Later you have Fresenius, which has grown to a company which is 60,000 people working in the medical field. So there's a lot of potential. And what I propose is that we change the character of Wiesbaden by founding a university, a technical university here in Wiesbaden, to develop all the technologies to make the world fit for the next 50 years. So one obvious area is what we would call the isotope economy. That means that we get our hand at and develop the knowledge how to control the processes, nuclear processes of transmutation, changing one element into another element in a controlled way, where we can then, like, if we want to get rid of nuclear waste, like plutonium, which is, has a half-life of 20,000 years, we can just turn it into another element which has then only 90 years of half-life. So it's much easier to handle, in a way, you know. And also we can start using these processes to develop raw materials out of stuff which is there but is not usable at this time. So instead of going through the world and looking for raw materials and then starting wars about these raw material resources, instead of that, we can develop techniques to develop it from what we have where we are.
Right.
And this is the future of humanity, you know, and in accepting this challenge and building a university here in Wiesbaden would, in fact, turn Wiesbaden into a city which really is useful for the rest of the world.
That's great. One thing to, I mean, this is true. I don't, I hate to go back to the negative, but what you're saying, again, means so much to some people in other parts of the world, whether it's the Philippines or someplace that sees all this damage to their own homeland from the last 40, 50 years of downturn into this post-agro-industrial mess. Is it the case, too, that Wiesbaden or other places in Hessen has seen this kind of fraud of sleight of hand where private interest comes in and buy up and shrink not only industrial and commercial operations, but housing or water or other utilities? They call them, the polite term, used to be called privatizations. Now it's called public-private partnerships. And some really rotten guys, transatlantic guys, Felix Rohatyn and his associates, used to be Lazard, it's also Lehman Brothers. You've had a lot of that there as well, that we're now seeing, like the poor city of Chicago is sold off its skyway, it's selling off its parking garages. What's the picture?
Well, in certain areas we do have that, but here in Germany it's like a funny variation in some areas. For example, here in the state of Hessen, you may know that we do have a federal rail system called the Deutsche Bahn. And they used to run the German rail system, and there were only, you know, like in very outlying areas you had some tourist rail, you know, operated on coal and vapor.
Steam, yeah.
For tourists, they would be, that would be kind of the kind of railroads which would be operated privately.
Yeah.
Now what they have is the state of Hessen has founded a company which legally is like a private company. It's state owned, but it's managed like a private company. And they have in the bidding for, you know, this is something that was invented by the European Union, like the big rail operators, they have to bid for the license to operate certain lines.
Right.
And this newly founded state company undercut the prices of the other companies.
I see.
And they did it by hiring, basically paying $300 less per month.
Mm-hmm.
To each of their workers.
Uh-huh. So they cut the pay of their people to run the railroad.
Yeah, they this was like founding a new company, you know, like it's not like in the United States where you don't have where a company can exclude trade unions to operate within.
Right.
It's not that way here in Germany. Even we have we have factory counts and all this is legally guaranteed. But there's a different tariff agreement between the unions and the state for these licensed railroads. And by founding a new company, they went outside that tariff agreement.
Okay.
And that's how they were able to undercut this. We have the same thing with Wiesbaden. This was done by the Hessen state governor, Roland Koch, who is actually a very good friend of Mr. Thompson.
Oh, Tommy Thompson from Wisconsin.
Yeah, right. He's actually peddling the Wisconsin social state as a model, Wisconsin model, which is, you know, forcing people to work. If they don't accept to work, they don't get any welfare, with a slight disadvantage that there is no jobs to get. You know,
mm-hmm.
So this is just a way to cut the social budget.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the office of this Herr Koch comes Mr. Müller, who is the candidate of the CDU here in Wiesbaden. He's now the treasurer of the city, and he's now running to become the mayor of Wiesbaden.
Mm-hmm.
So we have he's responsible also for. They did the same thing with the bus system, you know.
I see.
And there you had to the immoral, you had the ridiculous, when they merged or they sold half of the bus operation of the city of Wiesbaden to the bus operation of the city of Hamburg, which is also CDU run. And then this bus system of Hamburg paid their a share of the new company in part by providing buses.
Right.
Now Hamburg is in the flat land.
Sure.
And Wiesbaden is hilly. So the buses from Hamburg didn't get up the hill.
Oh. So the people had to get out and walk and help push the bus.
So this is, but this is, you know, everyone made fun about the company management, but who was responsible for putting in these people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's an ideology. It's an ideology which says it's the ideology of the free market, basically transported into the realm of the publicly run companies.
Mm-hmm.
And they even cut out with this new bus company that they founded. They even cut out private companies who had licenses by lower bidding.
Right. So it's really in the realm of swindles, flim flam, and
yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. And this is something that we're gonna put on the table
and
discuss.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. Otherwise, I mean, we have here in Wiesbaden one of the other companies that we did have. We had the seat of Linde Gas, which is one of the world leading, and they merged with a British company, and now the seat of the company, of the joint company, is moving to Munich, and then they had a how you call them, the Gabelstapler. This is the trolleys that you, if you have a factory to transport parts.
Oh. You either have transmission belts or other kinds of things?
No, it's like a little motorized cart.
Mm-hmm.
And the company, the branch of that company that produces that, that is the part of Linde that stayed here, but that has been sold out to one of these hedge funds.
Oh, no.
And they shortly before that, Linde shut down the fridge. You know, Linde is actually the inventor of fridges.
I see.
He was a Wiesbaden person, too.
A refrigeration system.
Refrigeration. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That was also more than 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now that part of the company, just in the last 1 or 2 years, has been shut down and moved to Czechia.
Mm-hmm. So what you're doing with getting into the nitty-gritty of everything, this must run counter to you were mentioning before the show, any pessimism that nobody is going to ever address this again. And I mean, that's one level. Then there are deeper levels. You were talking about pessimism when people look at the danger of war, when they see someone like Bush and Cheney in power in Washington. But you're talking about shifting all this, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's of historical dimensions. Also, for example, when Albert wanted to found his company here in Wiesbaden,
mm-hmm. It's the 1860s.
In the 1860s, mm-hmm. he didn't get permission by the Nassau Dukes.
Okay.
It was, in fact, the industrialization of Wiesbaden was prevented by these guys. Only after Bismarck had conquered the place, then the Prussian policy was industrial development. Therefore, Wiesbaden became big. Under the Nassau's, we had 25,000 inhabitants. Now it's 10 times that.
And you were supposed to be growing crops and weaving and dancing.
And these people are, I mean, these families, these rich oligarchic families, they are still here.
Mm-hmm.
The Nassau, the ruling family of Nassau that was deposed by Bismarck, they inherited the Luxembourg Duchy.
Mm-hmm.
The Grand Duke of Luxembourg is, in fact, would be the Duke of Nassau if he hadn't been deposed.
I see. Well, I guess some of our people from New York City listen to this by telephone later in the week, telephone archives, and I guess Nassau, Long Island, is named after the family from one either directly Wiesbaden or Luxembourg or the lowland somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Also Nassau on the Bahamas.
Yes, that's right. That's where. So they've made the name has made its mark, but you're trying to get to the great industrial inventive history and make that a way of life again.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. And then let me just ask one thing. We've heard that the party, whose name you can spell out in English, which was founded by you and friends, Mr. LaRouche's wife, Helga Zepp LaRouche, years ago, you've been getting out kind of updates, a statement. I think Mrs. LaRouche has one out. Of course, not everyone listens knows, but she is quite a German national and a leader. But that there's hope for the new year because of the prospects of change in Washington. But you've been circulating that throughout your district, I take it.
Yeah, we have been getting it out. We're getting it out nationally.
Mm-hmm.
We have a big chunk of our operation is actually in the national capital in Berlin. We have a lot of young people, quite comparable to what you're doing in Washington.
What we just heard.
And they are getting out the news there, and we're getting it out here and wherever we are. And this is, I think, a very important factor in remoralizing people. You know, part of the demoralization of the citizens here is if they look at the United States, you know, and they see they elected Bush, they re-elected Bush even after he did everything that he did. And I guess you have had similar feelings over there, but here in Germany,
yes.
You know, there is, because we never got rid of this, never really got rid of this oligarchy,
mm-hmm.
You know, there is this, people tend to see themselves less as citizens and more as subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And this is important, I think, to stress that I'm not the Meister of the subjects. I'm the Meister of the Bürger and the Oberbürgermeister.
Okay.
If I get elected. I'm the representative of the citizens.
Uh-huh.
And this is important, I think, to get this spirit, and having a change in the United States is, I mean, we see that you have a new majority in Congress. We're seeing now that some of these people are moving, but there's a lot of people who have a wait and see attitude to that, and they wait, you know, they won't believe in an impeachment of Bush until it has happened. But if it happens, that's really going to unleash a lot of positive forces also here in Europe.
Well, you've had the perfect last word to this hour. So I thank you, Alexander Hartman. I want to be having you back on after you've become mayor later in March of Wiesbaden. I want to make sure, listen again January 20th from 3 to 4. We're weekly. This is Marcia Mary Baker signing off. And I hope we can have Helga Zepp LaRouche on pretty soon in the new year to continue this discussion.
Yeah, I hope so too.
Okay, thanks a lot. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.